All right, we're talking to Dan Tapper from the United Kingdom, who usually works with very low frequencies. Is that an apt description of? Or you want to? I tend to let artists tell their own, give their own descriptions.
Yeah, well, I spend a lot of time working with what's called very low frequency electromagnetic sound, and it's a bit of a misnomer, really, because a lot of times I talk to people and they say, "Oh, well, the sounds that we're hearing in these recordings are not particularly low frequency in terms of the audio spectrum." The low frequency refers to the placing in the radio spectrum. So it's below terrestrial broadcasting. It's actually between about 3 kilohertz to 30 kilohertz. So it's actually not particularly, it's about audio spectrum, but it's low in the radio band.
So it's just a marker on the dial, but what it actually means is that the waves that are created are very large, right?
They're long, yeah. Yeah, and below that there's ELF, which is even longer, and you can get down to waves that are the one wavelength is the size of the planet. So very big waves indeed.
You have to have a very large antenna for to receive that.
Yes, an incredibly large antenna, a planet-sized antenna.
So what? How large are these VLF waves that we're talking about?
It depends how large, really. A lot of times from lightning, they're coming in. You build these receivers, and the receivers basically have to be about 12 to 14 meters square in terms of the area of wire to pick up the wavelengths. And this can be from lightning or from lower frequency sounds, which have quite long wavelengths, to sounds that are coming from general electromagnetic sources like computers and things like that.
And I give a comparison. An FM wave, we use these half wave antennas that are about 6 feet long. So I guess the waves are like 12 feet long. And then we have a AM transmitter, and it has an antenna, you saw it today, that's 12 or 15 feet long, but it's making a wave. I was told the wave that it's making is like 375 feet long,
that the
AM is creating. And so these waves that you're talking about are even larger than that.
They're even larger, yeah. I'm not aware of the precise sizings, but they're a lot larger than a lot longer, the peaks and troughs between the waves.
Yeah, the peaks and troughs of what we talk about, the size of the wave, is an ocean wave. So it's like from the bottom of the surface of the ocean to the top of the crest of the wave.
Yeah, and that's actually a great analogy, because the wavelengths are so long. They were often used in, say, telecommunications from the military to send signals under the water, because often if it was a shorter wavelength, the water would filter that out quicker, but the big, long VLF waves could be received underwater quite far. But it does take a very, very large transmitter to send these waves. There's actually one in the Science Museum in London, and it's probably the size of a two-story house in height and diameter.
Was it made for World War II or something?
I believe it was just I'm not sure it was World War II. It's just a transmitter for these signals.
I just assume that most human applications for VLF waves have some military...
I would imagine so, yeah. It probably was made around that time.
Because the idea is you can send a wave, a very long wave, like AM, you can send a lot farther than FM, for instance. And then these waves, you can send much farther. They're more like short wave, where you can bounce them around the world and around the planet.
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you hear on these waves, or what are these waves used for?
Yeah, well, my personal interest really came from reading Nicholas Collins's Handmade Electronic Music quite some time ago. And he has a very short paragraph in his first chapter about electromagnetism. And he says very briefly, there are these people that wrap very large lengths of wire around wooden crosses and listen to this on top of hills. And you can hear the sounds of lightning and, if you're lucky, the northern lights. So it kind of stuck in my psyche for some years. And then later I was listening to a talk by environmental sound recordist Chris Watson. And I'd been doing a lot of post-production sound design type stuff. And I really wanted to get out of the studio, and in that kind of talk it clicked in my brain, this kind of idea to begin building these large coils of wire for myself and listening to VLF. So I'm interested in hearing natural signals produced by lightning and other things in the Earth's ionosphere, like the northern lights.
And so lightning is an electrical action, and it creates a sound and it sends out information on a frequency.
Yeah, it's basically huge transferences of energy. So lightning can transfer via the magnetic poles of the Earth. So it can actually travel thousands of miles, and you can pick this up using very low frequency antennas. So lightning is actually one of the most common things that you hear when you listen to very low frequency in terms of natural signals.
And you can hear it from very far away. The light, like if you were listening here, where could you hear lightning from?
Well, you can hear locatively, so you can hear often thousands of miles away, so that just based on your surroundings. So often, depending on the, say it's a big flat plain like a desert, you can hear for very long distances. But also you're hearing sound from, say, if you're on the North Pole, you could be hearing sound from the South Pole as it's being channeled across via the magnetic lines. So then it's like a, you know, best point of access sort of thing. So that the signal has an easier way of making it to you.
I lived in Florida for a while, which is a very flat topography in general, and I think it's considered the lightning capital of the world. There's a lot of lightning in Central Florida between Tampa and Orlando. Would you be listening? You would hear a lot more in that area, or if you point south from here, can you hear?
In terms of the volume, I would say it's more the intensity of the signals as they come in. So for example, when I've actually recorded in the middle of lightning storms, the sounds are very, very loud. I wouldn't say that the consistency of the sounds is any higher than normal. It's just that they're a lot more intense because they're happening closer to your receiver.
And how did you first get interested in very low frequencies?
So through this Nicholas Collins book, Handmade Electronic Music, and then I built my first inductor based off a book called, I think it was Radio Nature by Renato Romero, who runs a blog called VLF.it, which is an Italian blog, which has loads of information for engineers and hobbyists who want to build these types of antennas. And then I went out, and I was recording mainly in the city, so I was recording in London. And I wasn't hearing that much natural signal. I was hearing quite a bit of lightning, but it was always kind of interspersed with the hum of the city. So you can also pick up with these antenna, you can pick up the sound of the mains grid, broadcast signals, televisions, anything that's electrical magnetic spectrum. So then I started exploring the magnetic sounds of the city rather than the natural sounds, because that was my environment.
And what does that sound like?
It sounds very aggressive. It's a lot of square waves, a lot of very harsh tones. So the hum in the UK, the mains grid is at 50 hertz. And so you hear a 50 hertz hum, and that's the mains grid's energy source. And in America, I believe it's 60 hertz. So it's a slight variation between the two countries, but there's a constant hum from this electricity. Other sounds, for example, like a TV or a microwave, are very kind of also very aggressive, and it's kind of like a blast of noise quite often. I did quite a few experiments recording with trains on the underground. So I'd take these VLF antennas and receivers about as far away from natural signals as you can get, and was recording the sounds of trains, so the motors and the various lights. So neon lights also create very loud sounds.
I know a friend discovered in New York City subway that if you tuned just below the FM dial, like 87.7 or 80, you know, at the very bottom of your FM dial, when the doors open and close on the subways, they emit this electromagnetic noise that you can hear audible.
Yeah, it's kind of like I actually have a recording that I've got for today of the trains, and you can hear it's like a kind of a very high frequency whistle, and then it kind of goes down, and that's the doors opening and closing.
You want to play that now?
Let's see if I can find it. This is a train. Should I just play the whole
Sure. Bit? And we're talking to Dan Tapper. All right, we're listening with Dan Tapper to very low frequencies, and your website magneticsymbols.tumblr.com is a place where you can find some of these recordings.
Yeah, Magnetic Signals.
And DanTapperSoundDesign.com is your...
My main website is DanTapperSoundDesign. And that sort of links out to my various projects, including my Magnetic Signals work.
So explain what we were just hearing.
So we were just listening to the sounds of various trains from the London Underground, and the last section is the London Overground system. So we're hearing trains pulling into the station, their doors opening and closing. I get into the train, riding along on the train, getting some quite strange looks from a lot of the passengers because I have this big loop that I'm carrying around.
The loop, is a, that's the, what the antenna looks that's like the, to receive?
Yeah, it's a loop. So it's about, so I'd say it's about maybe two meters by 2 meters. So it's quite big.
And that's because these waves are so large that it has to be similarly large.
2 meters, sorry, about, what would this be about?
1 meter probably.
Yeah, okay, 1 meter by 1 meter. And so I'm carrying that to pick up these signals, listening on headphones on the train. So, yeah, getting some strange looks. But basically, we're hearing the train moving along, and we're hearing the sounds of the engines, we're hearing the sounds of the neon lights, we're hearing the sounds of the brakes coming in and the doors opening. And on the overground train, which is the last sort of minute or so when there's more sort of aggressive types of sound, we're hearing signal boxes, which are overloading the spectrum. And that's the very high frequency sounds, which kind of fade into each other. So it's kind of mixing between various tones.
And that's like, so that's like the electromagnetic footprint of the train.
Yeah.
Or and you
and the sort of the surrounding train area.
And, or wherever it passes by. Yeah. And so you can hear why, I guess, when radio was first being listened to, people thought they could hear ghosts because it's very eerie soundscape.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and often when you're listening to very low frequency recording or hacking into electromagnetic radio bands or kind of listening in between radio bands, you can hear snatches of radio. One of the first recordings I ever did was on top of a hill in Somerset in the UK, and I was picking up this American evangelical radio station somehow within the sort of the natural radio, and the sound of it was sort of being cross-modulated with the VLF. So you'd hear this guy preaching about sort of things going to all wrong, and then the natural sounds would kind of cross-modulate and his voice would be going up and down, so it would get very low, so it'd sound very demonic, which is very kind of fitting. So
things were going all wrong with the broadcast as he was
commenting
about things going all wrong.
His kind of bit will fade in. If you have an element of performance as well, you can actually move around, so certain areas will be hot spots for certain signals, so you can move around and kind of find that bit, and then you can move away and kind of modulate it and then move back to create interesting kind of recordings.
We try to ask this of almost every guest that sits in this room. Do you have an early radio memory or something about radio when you were young that got you interested or has stuck with you in some way?
Yeah. I grew up listening to the radio, so I grew up listening to the BBC. And I really like the shipping forecast, which is basically it's at night, often in the early hours of the morning, where they kind of just say words that I'm not even particularly sure what they mean, but it's basically kind of shipping terminology about the kind of the English Channel and the surrounding channels and, like, you know, the surrounding seas in Europe. And it's kind of this very sort of slow, sort of very kind of meditative thing that happens at the early hours in the morning, which I kind of really remember liking.
Someone told us a story about I think it's in Wisconsin, a radio station that reads the obituaries every morning.
Wow, yeah, that sounds
sort of similar. They had a similar description of it.
Yeah.
What else have you brought for us to listen to today?
Well, I've brought a few things. Some things are VLF. I've brought some things which are more relating to my more recent projects, which is sort of touching on VLF. I also do visual arts, and I've been working more recently bringing my interests in very low frequency electromagnetism and radio art together with the more visual kind of sounds that I work, well, the visual side of the work I do, but also working with data, so scientific data. I'm very interested in art-science crossover. So working with data from space, which is quite a nice departure from VLF because it has VLF itself has links to radio astronomy. So it's kind of the next sort of logical step, taking that data and creatively morphing it and using it and warping it as far as possibly as I possibly can, and seeing if that still comes across as data.
So radio astronomy, that's this gigantic receiver antennas in the New Mexico desert. Is that where you're?
Yeah, lots of those, and getting data where I can. A lot of that data is actually available online. There's a particularly good source, which is called Charisma, which is the Canadian Array for Electromagnetic Signals. I'm not sure what the Charisma stands for, but it's CARISMA. And you can actually sign up on their website and get a lot of radio astronomy data, which you can download, and then you can process that.
This is a great radio thing, but have you seen this app? This is called the Architecture of Radio. Here, you can take it and point it at the sky and see what satellites are above us right now.
Oh, wow.
So this is taking, I guess, the data of its input, where all the satellites are in the atmosphere around us, and then so it tells where you are by your GPS and can tell you where, and it supposedly tells you where other Wi-Fi things. I'm not so sure about that. There's like cell towers it shows you. So it's kind of mapping out the frequencies around you in an artistic way is what it's meant to be. But
that's really nice.
So that seems like the taking that data, that the same thing that the app is taking, and using it. How do you use it? Yeah. Or what do you do with it?
Well, for example, I'd take data from, say, a radio telescope, and I'd sonify that. So I'd put it into a max patch, which would then sonify it. Or I would do things, for example, I'd take information from the planetary orbits and their rotations, and I'd work out a frequency for each of those based on the, because each planet you can find information about planetary frequencies. A lot of those are way below the audible range. So I would then.
So this is like VLF. So the Earth vibrates at one frequency and Mars vibrates at another.
I believe I've heard that Earth vibrates at about 8 hertz.
Oh, so what is the difference between Mars and Venus then?
I could look it up. I have this listed down somewhere. But I think, you know, each planet has, you know, different rotation rates and stuff like that. And that's all kind of logged. And you can put a pitch to that. And then that's often what sonification is as well. It's like taking the data and assigning a value, a value of sound,
like
to
pitch
a number.
Or, yeah. Or a frequency or beat per second or
so
something.
So, for
like
example,
that.
I was using the pitch. The pitch is the rotation, so how often the planet rotates on its axis, and the volume of it is the frequency in which it rotates around the sun, so its orbit around the sun. So you get...
So how long its days are and how long its years are.
Yeah, so you get really nice effects if you combine all those together, and you get like, it's kind of like binaural beats, but on a, you know, with 8 channels, and that's quite nice. So I did that sort of thing. I'd also take sound that had already been produced as sonifications, and I would warp that and I'd stretch it, and then I'd take the artifacts of that sound and then crush it back down. So it's kind of creating, it's kind of warping and glitching data and creating creative projects from it, rather than, it's an artistic use of data rather than a very, very kind of deliberate use of data. It's sort of looking at how people are sonifying and visualizing this data, which is presented to us by organizations like NASA, and just any visualization you see, it's a creative choice to show that data. But I'm just kind of trying to make that choice more obvious by taking the data really far away from its original source.
You can the impact of the data can be much different if you like listen to the spinning of the Earth compared to the spinning of Mars. In a sonic way, that's much more much more informational than it is just on paper.
Yeah, you can. And what's really interesting about sound is like you can hear things with sound which you can't necessarily see, but sound and visual are good for different things. So, for example, a visualization, you can look at a vast amount of data really quickly, and you can see that, and you, because we're really good at recognizing trends in visuals. Sound, you can't,
like a pie chart. You just stare at a pie chart and instantly you know 50% of people are for Trump and 50% are against him or whatever.
Yeah. But with sound, it can be more long durational. So that can be good for other things. So you can, you know, and we're more perceptive to changes in sound over time. So really visuals for getting very quick information, which is often more simple, but you can convey more complex information through sound quite often because there's so much more nuance to it. So there's really interesting things going on with seismology, and there's, I believe there's a group in Utah who are doing resonances on the arches there, the stone arches, and they use sound to work out, they can actually work out how likely they are to collapse and things like that through the structural security of the, those sounds.
So you can tell when a bridge, you can predict when a bridge might collapse based on the sound of its foundation? Sort of?
I'm not sure about a bridge. They're doing like stone arcs, but stone essentially, arc.
But
this,
it's
essentially
the same theory.
Could, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think sound's very, very powerful for telling things like that. And as algorithms get more advanced, I think people will go to sound more and more because it's a very, very rich source of data.
And there's other scientists that listen for earthquakes. Like, is this the same sort of thing? Listening to the earth's vibrations?
Yeah. So people can obviously, they can tune into to earth sounds and things like that. And one of the things, it's kind of a more esoteric use of VLF, and people, it's very kind of, I think it's quite divisive. A lot of people don't think this actually is something that happens, but some people claim that you can detect seismic events using the VLF spectrum beforehand. It hasn't actually been proven, but this is something that people, some people believe.
There's a theory out there.
Yeah. So that's kind of another bow to some seismologists, I guess.
And is, this is, I'm guessing, sort of like now there's hydrophones in all the oceans. Are there VLF receivers around the world that you can tune in online on the internet? Or
yeah, I believe there are a number. I'm not sure of any specific sites, but for example, like a lot of radio telescopes now, they're using souped up VLF technology. So for example, there's a telescope in the Netherlands called LOFAR, which is the low frequency array, and that's lots and lots of single antennas, so basically VLF antennas, but by combining those antennas in lots of different configurations over a large space and combining that with a supercomputer, you can actually precisely pinpoint areas in the sky to analyze and get data from.
Wow. All right, what else have you brought for us, or what do you want to tell us about?
Yeah, so I guess I'll play an excerpt from a new piece I've been working on called Heliosphere. I've got the synopsis of it here.
We're talking to sound artist Dan Tapper here.
Yeah. So this piece is called Heliosphere, and it's a creative exploration of the solar system through sound. And it involves a variety of techniques to creatively interpret information gathered from space, so sonifications and visualizations of planetary orbits. And these are doing things like controlling synthesizer LFOs and cutoffs. I also use electromagnetic emissions from a pulsar to as sort of beat-based material. I create impulse responses from the Earth's ionosphere. So the ionosphere is the bubble that surrounds the Earth and kind of protects
us from bad waves from the sun.
So the radiation. But this is kind of what allows VLF signals to propagate in the around the Earth. And I read somewhere that you can actually get an impulse response that actually is a very good reading of the Earth's ionosphere by taking a whistler, which is a sound that you can get. It's a byproduct of lightning bouncing between the Earth and the ionosphere. You can take that sound, and that is a snapshot in time of what the Earth's ionosphere is doing. So I use impulse responses of the ionosphere to create a virtual space to play back these sounds in and post-process. I also created a makeshift heliosphere out of a balloon and propagated sound through that. So there's various kind of things, but basically it's combining audio synthesis, image creation, and composition with data. And it explores the creative elements that are present in the choices made in the representation of sound and visual data from space, which is presented to us often by organizations and has been approximated and visualized in various ways by them. So it's kind of my take on that.
And there are some VLF is used in pop culture. I think the first Star Wars movie, they used some VLF recordings to make some of the alien sounds or the
that's brilliant. I hope they did. That's awesome.
Do you know about other examples of I
mainly know in like the electroacoustic field, I guess. So I know of like Alvin Lucier using VLF sounds a lot and hinting to them as well in his works later on. But I don't know that much about its use in pop culture.
Are there other artists that you like a lot that work with VLF?
Yeah, there's a really great lady called Joyce Hinterding, who's an Australian kind of sound artist, composer, and she does very large scale installations making very big VLF antennas which pick up all the electromagnetic sounds in the environment, and that is basically wrapping loads and loads of wire around galleries, which is a really stunning piece. And she does lots of other amazing stuff as well.
All right, what else do you have for us?
So I'm going to play an excerpt of this heliosphere piece.
All right, yes.
Thank you.
We are talking to Dan Tapper. You can go to dantappersounddesign.com for more information. Dan, what was that?
That was a piece called Heliosphere, which was working with data from space and sonifying it and visualizing it into audio work.
And that's a recent work, or?
Yeah, I created it for my first, I had my first solo gallery show recently in April. And I got some money to create a new piece for that. And I'd been wanting to create this piece for a while. It had sort of been in my mind. And then I had the sort of the opportunity and the time to do it. So I thought I would take it. And so it was designed for a full screen wall projection. And I also have, I initially actually composed the audio without the visual. And that is an 8-channel sound work. And it's about 10 minutes, the actual full audio.
And you want to describe the visual for folks?
Yeah, for sure. The visual kind of incorporates three elements, really. And it's working with hardware manipulation. So manipulating oscillators and playing with the XY oscilloscopes, not oscillator. Yeah, so playing with oscilloscopes and playing with the XY axis to create interesting patterns. Playing with light painting and long exposures, so kind of creating orbs of light. Playing with working with data that I'd taken from the sound and then converting that into spectrograms, which are sort of spherical, so sort of spectrogram planets, you could say. And then also working with lots of kind of more analog type video effects. A lot of it was kind of created digitally and then taken out of the digital realm and worked with analogly and then kind of re-recorded and played back in digitally to create a kind of a more sort of glitchy kind of just sort of, you know, more kind of textured effect, I guess.
Which the music was also quite textured too, or the sounds were also quite textured.
Yeah, it kind of came from a few sources for the sound actually. So a lot of it was sort of individual experiments that I've been doing and working towards that I then kind of collated and combined. And those were kind of like all the individual elements of the track are those kind of experiments. But then I did a series of improvisations. So I basically built a kind of a responsive system with kind of synthesizers and kind of feedback, physical feedback loops and things like that, and that was all responding to various data streams coming in. So the original data that I'd used to create the music was then played through a different system that was a more analog type of system, and that had different responses to create a kind of a more responsive effect. So it was kind of, I could basically set this improvisational system, I could kind of set some levels and things like that, and then I could leave it and record, and then I could kind of get to a sweet spot, and then I would incorporate that into the final work. So that's kind of all the textual stuff that you're hearing in the background is this live improvisation. So it's a physical, just a live audio recording of 8 channels of improvised sound.
All right. What else did you bring for us to listen to?
Yeah, so I brought a few more VLF pieces, which I guess we've already touched on that. But I also have been working kind of going back to my roots as kind of a composer, composing kind of electronic music. I've been, again, taking off from the idea of kind of the idea of data, but I've been completely sort of imagining. The Heliosphere project led me to sort of create completely imaginary data and imagine sort of sounds and basically imaginary journeys through space, because I'm fascinated by space. So I've created a whole album called Ven, which is based around a piece of software that I wrote. And the initial idea of the software is I wanted to be able to gesturally move between loads and loads of sounds really quickly. So it's kind of like a more user-friendly version of Catart, which is something, it's a Max MSP piece of software produced by Ercam in France. And that allows you to break up loads and loads of sounds into their constituent parts. And then you can move between all those sounds based on kind of categories and things like that. So I'm using basically a Venn diagram based system, but I have a graphics tablet and I can draw between sounds really quickly and morph between them. And with an external controller, I can then kind of capture areas of sound and loop them and affect them in various ways. So basically created an album based on my Heliosphere experiments, just improvising with little snippets of the sound and kind of breaking it up and creating completely new music. So I brought one of those pieces along and it's called Bloom.
All right, let's hear Blue from Dan Tapper.
Thank you.
That was Blue from Dan Tapper. Why did you call it that?
It's called Bloom, actually.
Bloom, oh.
And it was, it's kind of like the beginning of a album that I was asked to make, and basically it's a journey of five tracks through kind of space and kind of my imagination. So I thought Bloom was quite a nice kind of opening for it, because it's kind of the cosmos is kind of blooming into existence, and kind of all these bits of kind of atoms and things just smashing together and exploding and kind of beautiful kind of blooms and quite kind of ambient textural kind of stuff.
And the source sounds were from VLF or from what?
They were from the Heliosphere piece. So I took the sort of the source set of sounds that I've been working with for Heliosphere, and I would then manipulate those, and all the pieces for this album were created using those sounds.
And that was from the album called Ven?
Yes, yeah, which is going to be released, I believe, in towards the end of June by a record label called Elm Records, which is a New Zealand-based label, and you can find them on SoundCloud.
And do you have other shows or exhibitions or things coming up the rest of the year?
I've got a few things. I'm performing Heliosphere as a sound piece at the Toronto International Electroacoustic Symposium in August. What else? Yeah, that's about it at the moment that I know of.
We're speaking to Dan Tapper, and you can go to dantappersounddesign.com for more information about his work and background. What else did you bring us? Anything else?
I've got some more kind of VLF sounds. I could play more sounds from the album that I just played, or I could play kind of improvisations. I've got a few things. Well, I've actually got a whole VLF documentary that I made, but that's half an hour, so it might be a bit long, but we could play an excerpt of it. So this is a VLF documentary which I made last year, and it's a broadcast documentary, and it's been broadcast on various platforms like Resonance FM, and also it has been installed in various venues as kind of a multi-channel, a quadraphonic installation. But basically, my interest in VLF took me to interview and collate information from lots of other artists and scientists and eccentrics who are doing this kind of stuff, and kind of collate it into a broadcast documentary, with eventually the aim of making a film documentary. And so it's a kind of a stream of consciousness piece of work, so you can listen to it and you can get some information, or you can just kind of zone out and just listen to the sounds. But it's aimed at kind of giving a little bit of information to anyone who would be interested in getting involved in VLF. So this is called Some Call It Noise.
Okay, now by about 8 minutes before 6 a.m., 12... coming up on 1300 hours in about 6 or 7 minutes. That's 0600. On 12 April 2011 near Kilo, California, this is Whistlers. Beautiful this morning, early Tuesday morning. It's just beginning to be daybreak. Actually, it's getting to be starting to lighten up out there.
It's like a solar belch. Part of the sun's atmosphere gets injected out into space. Now, the Earth's magnetic field is brilliant. It protects us, basically. It pushes a great deal of these particles around the Earth, but the energy can get stored up in the magnetic fields. Think of them like elastic bands. They get pushed back from the day side to the night side of the Earth. And what can eventually happen is the rubber bands snap. They get too much energy and they ping back. Thank you. see where the magnetic fields propagate from is the north and south pole, just like on a normal magnet. So all these energy in these particles get fed down to the north and south pole, and this is what causes the aurora. These particles rush down to the atmospheric poles, hit them, and it's just like in a neon light. The energy hits it, basically causes the atoms to be excited, and this causes them to give off light. It basically visually can see it. Do is give off other forms of radiation. One of the other forms of radiation is radio waves.
Let's do some contact with a test. 2, 3, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We're
talking to Dan Tapper. What did we just hear, Dan? Yeah.
So that was Some Call It Noise, a documentary on VLF.
And you've put together a how-to or
Yeah, I put together a document called VLF, A Sound Artist's Guide, which is available on my website, or alternatively, you can search VLF, A Sound Artist's Guide, and you'll find it online. It's an online publication. And it's basically a guide for anyone who is interested in getting involved with these types of sounds. And it goes from the ground up, describing what these sounds are, some kind of basic science, how you can build your own antenna to record the sounds, what sort of equipment works well, and it even includes my kind of journey as well towards the end, and other people's journeys as well. I've kind of collated some interviews and some written diaries from my own practice.
So the documentary and the PDF are both essential sort of guides for getting started if you want to work with VLF.
Yeah, definitely. If you're interested in the subject, I definitely recommend them as sort of first points of entry.
We're speaking with Dan Tapper, and you can go to dantappersounddesign.com for more information and sound samples and text and all sorts of visualizations.
Yeah, actually, there's if you go to my website, you can find my co-poetry blog, which actually is for the last 2 to 3 years, I've been doing code-based visualizations and code work online, and it's a Tumblr, and it's got quite popular. I just reached over 12,000 followers now, so it's getting quite popular now, which is quite good, and it's got about 700 unique artworks to view, and quite a number of them are inspired by sort of electromagnetic sound and visualization of these types of sound, either directly from the data or in an imaginative kind of way.
And that's visualcodepoems.tumblr.com.
I believe so.
So thank you so much, Dan Tapper, for stopping by the Wave Farm. And again, people can go to dantappersounddesign.com for more information. Is there anything we left out or you want to mention?
No, that all sounds perfect. Yeah, thanks for... Yeah, that all sounds fine.
Well, it was a pleasure hearing about very low frequencies today and your other work.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.